Yes, hi, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's good to be here with you virtually. I'm still at City Hall. It's been a long day. I have been pretty busy up here along with my staff working on a whole host of issues. We have been working in the past month on a bunch of issues around youth and youth violence. You may have seen that there was some incidents at Stonestown Mall of violence, of youth assaulting each other. And we have been working with the Terrebonne Police Department, with the precinct, the captain, and the folks at the Terrebonne Police, along with the San Francisco Unified School District, the district attorney, the Department of Public Health, you know, everyone in the city family, to come up with a comprehensive plan to support the school district and our young people to reduce violence and hold people accountable who are perpetrating violence on others. I can report things are going pretty well in that respect. We have seen a big increase of presence of police at the Stonestown Mall, along with cooperation from the operator of the mall, which is Brookfield, as they have other properties in the area and have been able to pull in private security inside the mall to support safety. And in the past couple weeks, things have really calmed down. And most importantly, it's gotten out on social media with the kids that the mall is not the fun place to be, to come and do this kind of activity. So that has worked at interrupting the fun factor, as we found that a lot of these kids really were coming to Instagram Live what was going on and get more likes and more followers on Instagram by filming essentially these activities taking place. And so that has been interrupted, and that has been pretty effective. And I will give kudos to the Terrebonne Police Captain Robert Yick, who was on top of it, super collaborative and very strategic in channeling the resources on early release days, which are Wednesdays, which is when we saw most activity. I've also been working with my colleagues in the Unified School District on channeling the funds from Prop G to support positive after-school activities for the kids who are still, recovering from 2 years of the pandemic, being on Zoom and not being supported in, talking to one another and doing the developmental stage, which is normal, to learn how to, be able to resolve conflicts without violence and instead talking to one another. We have been busy working on issues of pedestrian safety around the district. We had a town hall meeting in the Inner Sunset at the county fair, which I know several folks from Golden Gate Heights attended. And we talked to the MTA and to the County Transportation Authority about the investments that we need to reduce congestion, reduce traffic, make pedestrian safety a priority along the Irving Street corridor and the corners that we know are dangerous, like 7th and Lawton, 9th and Irving, and all of the conflicts that happen. And enforcement was a really big topic during our town hall meeting. People feeling like there was a real lack of enforcement of like double parking and people behaving badly, running through stop signs and making illegal left turns, causing problems for everyone. So I asked formally the County Transportation Authority to conduct a transit study of the entire corridor, including Lincoln, Irving, 7th Street to 9th Street, so that we can know what the things are that we can do proactively to reduce conflicts and also beef up enforcement on all those issues. I have also been working on the budget. This year is going to be a tough budget year. We are facing a deficit, and have been working proactively with the mayor's office to identify where we can be more efficient with the use of our funds, still meet the services that San Franciscans expect from city government. So stay tuned for that. We are going to be holding a town hall meeting specifically with Supervisor Connie Chan, who is the chair of the budget committee, to let the public know what is going on with the budget and what we can expect as we go through this budget season. And lastly, I know that issues around safety and crime, the increase in property crime, have been really important to the residents of District 7. So we will be hosting a town hall meeting on public safety specifically next week. It will be live at St. Brendan's school, and we will have the chief of police and our district attorney, Brooke Jenkins, attending to answer questions from the community and to present what the vision is of our new district attorney in collaboration with law enforcement to address the issues of public safety and what resources, we can offer from the District 7 office to support that vision. And the last thing I will tell you is about participatory budgeting, which is open right now once again. We are putting out the bigger grants, so $50,000 per grant, half on Vision Zero and half on community projects. We are keeping the same categories as at last year, which is all about supporting community preparedness for disasters, resilience, and beautification. And I am hoping that, folks will get those really good ideas in to us so that we can support you as we beautify and support the neighborhood. So I will now take questions.
But I'll start with the questions that were submitted with the applications. Number one, can you share analysis of budgetary shortfalls the city is facing from reduced employment tax? What is the knock on impact?
It's not just employment tax that we've seen a reduction on. By far, we have seen a reduction in, the taxes on commercial rents because we have a lot of office that's empty. We have seen a reduction on the hotel tax, which supports our arts, because we haven't seen as quick a recovery from our tourism sector as we had hoped. So it's like across the board that we're seeing it. Even our real estate transfer tax, which last year came in over what we had predicted, is down. So we got the news from our controller that the predictions were actually worse than what we had expected. Like I said, we are working with the mayor's office because ultimately it's the mayor's budget. And what we do is that we can, reduce what she puts in and then add back some of our own priorities. That's what we have the authority to do. But I'm hoping that we can do all the work ahead of time and not have it be a really contentious process, that we can come together and identify the areas where, there we can reduce. We are already understaffed across the board. It's not just the police department. It's all agencies that have seen, a reduction in staff. What I predict we will be able to do is just not fill positions. That is how we can get to some significant savings.
There was a question about traffic calming on 7th Avenue, but you just...
So the CTA will do a study, like legit study of the entire corridor, not just one corner, whatever, but the entire, it all works together. And I'm hoping that, they'll give us something that we can really support.
I know when the left turn signal changes at Lincoln, it's suddenly a freeway up 7th Avenue.
Terrible.
The members. What are some of the best ways to prevent, mitigate, and or address concerns regarding the impact of UCSF construction projects?
Yeah, so we came up with a bunch of agreements from UCSF. And as everyone on this call probably knows, we have no jurisdiction over zoning over UCSF because it's a state agency. But certainly we have jurisdiction over building permits. So, you know, there is a way for us to, you know, just hold them accountable to the commitments that they have been, that they have made. You know, and what we have as leverage is our ability to hold up their permits where they're actually building something, because those are issued by the city.
Combine two questions here. There's one question from the chat. Says, given the severe shortage of police in the city, how are the decisions about that made and events to respond to it made? And that goes along with another question. The voting against police supplementals and the Terravelle station being down 50% of staffing.
Okay, so those are three different things. The police supplemental we approved as a board 3 weeks ago. There was only one vote against that supplemental, and that was my colleague, Supervisor Dean Preston from District 5, who voted against it. The rest of the board all voted to support it. And, you know, what we know is that we are down almost 500 police. But I think that the problem has not been budget. It has been recruitment. And so I just want to make sure that folks understand that it is not just a police department issue. This is across the board. San Francisco has been having trouble recruiting teachers, recruiting nurses, recruiting mental health professionals and police. I think it's an issue that we've had. And because we are in a tough budget time, you know, that might actually make it that we don't have to lay people off because, you know, we're already down some people. I'm not saying that I am, you know, against hiring more. I'm saying that, you know, the reality is that we are down in every department, including bus drivers, including nurses and teachers, as we have said.
Next one is, how can you justify the mess that is along Winston Avenue and Lake Merced Boulevard?
I don't justify it. We're working on it. Let me just say a little bit more, because I don't want to dismiss that question. We have an active project approved on Lake Merced Boulevard to eliminate some of the free parking on Lake Merced and instead put in a protected bike lane. That project, that cannot move forward where, you know, there's a lot of vehicles going, you know, on Lake Merced Boulevard in Winston. Let me say that people have talked a lot about the folks who are living in the RVs on Lake Merced. We have worked pretty closely with the Department of Homelessness and the Coalition on Homelessness and have gone door to door and gotten to know who lives on those RVs. Overwhelmingly, they are Latino families, service sector workers, mostly who either lost a job or something happened during the pandemic. And have no choice but to live in their vehicles right now. Many of them have children who are in the San Francisco Unified School District. It's a very different population than the homeless population that we see in other parts of town. That is one part of who is parked on Lake Merced and Winston. And then there's like all kinds of other vehicles that are parked there because it's free. There's, there's cargo containers, there's semi trucks, there are hauling vehicles, there is a company that transport cars across states that has like three different trailers parked on Lake Merced. So there's all kinds of things going on besides folks living in their vehicles, and then there's the folks living in their vehicles. We've been working with HSH to try to get families housed permanently, not in their vehicles, by giving them vouchers that we've gotten from FEMA during the pandemic. That is how we're going to stabilize some of those folks. And then we're also trying to get, you know, a safe parking site like what we did at the Balboa Upper Yard before that housing was built there, so that we can get folks off the street. And then lastly, you know, we are trying to get MTA to enforce the 4-hour parking along Vidal and Lake Merced, because there are rules and MTA has not enforced them for the last 3 years.
What audit measures are in place to oversee nonprofit social services organizations?
You know, we do have lots of rules in the city for contracting and maintaining the accounting rules that we expect nonprofits to follow. Those rules are not often or not always regularly enforced in the way they should be. I know my colleague, Catherine Stephanie, is taking the lead on making sure that that happens consistently and that we can stand behind every contract that we give to a nonprofit. And she's going to have a hearing in the next couple weeks on that. So if folks are interested, stay tuned. It'll be at the GAO committee. And I know that Supervisor Safai has been supporting her in that effort as well.
Goldmere Restaurant, approved for second of the appeal is tomorrow. 418 at City Hall Board Chamber Room. What is your opinion at the 600-foot buffer, not including protection for preschool kids, learning center kids, and other specialized programs?
So those are two different issues. The 800 Terravel appeal I cannot talk about because it is, you know, it would prevent me from voting if I, you know, gave you an opinion about that. So I'm not going to do that. I just met 20 minutes ago, I met with the appellants and the project sponsors trying to come up with a solution to seeing, you know, their two opposite opinions on this project. So I'm working on it pretty diligently, as is my staff, but I cannot tell you, you know, how I'm going to vote, because that would prevent me from voting, and I don't want to do that. Now, as far as the proposed buffer, I have not seen that legislation. I have heard about it, but I have not seen it nor read it, so I don't want to give you an opinion about, you know, the legislation that I have not yet seen. But when it comes out, I will be happy to come back and tell you what I think.
How do you prioritize parks and open spaces in your district and why? Actually, let's just take that as a single. I'll take the other one separate.
How do I prioritize parks and open spaces? I'm not sure what the question means, because I don't prioritize them. I mean, they're under the jurisdiction of the Recreation and Parks Department. And, you know, we float a bond, which is part of our capital plan, every few years to support the parks. And it is the Parks Department that, you know, allocates where the improvements are. What I do sometimes is, move things gently when, you know, there's something that's falling apart that really needs attention outside of their schedule for investment, and try to find the money in other places. But, you know, I can think of two different instances when that happened in our district. One, at the Aptos playground that was falling apart, and then in, at Lake Merced. But it's not super common that things in our district get decayed as much.
How would you address the rash of violent crimes going on in USFD's middle schools and Muni by youth offenders?
Mm-hmm. Well, so let me just say that there's two different things. You know, there is the rise in crime, and I do think that this is related to the pandemic, that for a couple of years, especially kids who came into puberty during the pandemic, didn't have as many adults in their lives as they would have were it not for, you know, the schools being closed. So they didn't have access to counselors, to teachers, to other adults who could guide them in their relationships. So we have seen a rise in youth violence. We have seen a rise in harassment and sexual assaults in school, in understanding issues of consent and how to talk to one another. So the Department of Children, Youth, and Families has been really stepped up in terms of their investment to support the schools in hiring counselors and paying for curriculum, for conflict resolution, for supporting, you know, the kids and trying to, you know, get back to where they should be in developmentally, and providing those resources. The other part that we haven't really talked about in the media is, or, you know, in all these, stories about youth violence is what happens to all the other kids who are there as the audience, which is something that we have seen consistently, both in the assaults in the schools and outside of schools, at the mall and in on Muni. And that is kids who were just, you know, there instead of trying to stop the violence or trying to negotiate the conflict. They were there, you know, with their phones, Instagram Live-ing what was going on. And I do think that there is a role for the Unified School District and our DCYF to support that education, to make sure that kids understand sort of the moral implications of just, you know, putting something on Instagram Live rather than doing the right thing and, you know, being human and stopping violence and, you know, stopping conflicts before they happen rather than, you know, the voyeuristic putting it on Instagram Live. And so we are working with DCYF and a professor at San Francisco State University on supporting the SFUSD with a curriculum specifically on this, on the role of social media in youth violence and, you know, the individual responsibility that comes with, you know, when you're witnessing something rather than interfering and putting it on your Instagram Live so that you can get more followers and more likes and how the morality of that.
Give you an easy one here. What is your favorite historical person, place, or event in this district?
Oh, my. Well, you know, our district has a lot of really great characters, but I will pick just one. And one of my favorites is Carol Channing. So Carol Channing attended Commodore Sloat Elementary School and Lowell High School. And in fact, the auditorium at Lowell High School, no longer in our district. But, you know, Commodore Sloat Elementary School certainly is. And she did grow up in District 7. And she is one of my all-time favorite actresses.
There you go. Where can one get more information about running charging cables for electric cars on the street?
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
Because there is no information. So that is a really good question that, you know, was raised to my office a couple weeks ago by folks at Sharp. Cities have, like, I think it was Seattle that has some rules around it. We don't. Like, nobody has any rules. And so I did meet with a planning department, and we are going to be meeting with the Department of the Environment and the PUC to come up with a plan. Because, you know, this is coming. So our climate action goals, the number one thing that we're going to do is move to electric vehicles, right? But in many folks around the city don't have a garage or someplace to plug in their vehicles. They put them on the street and, you know, you have to run the cable to charge them or put them in a, you know, parking that has the infrastructure to support that. But we're not there yet. So I'm going to work on it. But right now there is no place where you can find it because it doesn't exist. But we're working on it.
That's a good answer to a tough question. You co-sponsored Prop J, which permanently closed JFK Drive to vehicles for the disabled and everybody else. Negative impacts include increased traffic jams, safety problems on 9th and Lincoln, loss of thousands of customers at the DeYoung Museum and the Academy of Sciences, and loss of city tax revenues there. Are there any ways you see of solving some of the problems that were created with all this?
I would take issue that some of those problems that you just listed, Dennis, were the result of, you know, closing JFK Drive. But, you know, I do think that some of the negative impacts, especially on the DeYoung Museum, can be helped. So, and I will contrast that with the Academy of Sciences, who has implemented a whole bunch of programs to, support their employees and their patrons in taking transit or paratransit or other alternatives in driving in cars and parking. And so they have had much better success than the De Young has, and as evidenced by the numbers of folks going into the academy. And I think that we can support the De Young in doing some of those things as well. And so I have been working with Thomas Campbell, the director of the De Young, on how we can help them do some of these things. Now, in terms of the traffic issues, there's been a bunch of challenges for the 44 getting through the park, and we've been working with the MTA and the County Transportation Authority, as I said, to do a study and figure out what we can do to help. One of the things that has been the most impactful in the transit situation has been that there's a bunch of parklets now on Irving, when the streetcar turns and people are double parked illegally in front of the parklets, everything comes to a stand. People can't get through. Pedestrians, cars, no one else. And so those are the things that we're going to be working on with the MTA, and I think that there are specific physical changes that we can make to make the situation better.
How can the city help small businesses with graffiti abatement? We spend so much money cleaning up with apparently no help from the city and only fines. And I'd like to add on that is that graffiti abatement should also extend to existing parklets, because the graffiti sends to be just as bad on the parklets as they are on the actual buildings.
Well, so in fact, there is, and I'm glad you asked this question so I can promote our program. I wrote legislation and got millions of dollars in last year's budget added to the Department of Public Works to help small businesses in exactly this situation. And it is an opt-in program. So if you have a business that has been repeatedly tagged and you want to opt into our program, all you have to do is through 311, contact DPW, fill out the form, give us your permission to paint over the graffiti, and that includes the parklets, and then we will do it for you. So this program is funded for the next 2 years, and it's been very successful. The city, the DPW graffiti team cannot touch your private property unless you give us permission. So the way that it works is that if the graffiti is there, you get tagged and you don't clean it up within the 48 hours, you will get cited, because that is the only way we can control it. But if you want help, all you have to do is fill out the form, and then we will do it for you.
Terrific. Why is there a focus for many city leaders and developers on building high density, even high rise housing in the west side of the city, when downtown offices are largely empty and can be used for this purpose? The character of the neighborhood and the quality of life issues are at risk.
I don't know that it's an either or. I think we have to do both. I think we need to reconfigure some of the office spaces and spaces downtown that are not coming back in the way that we had envisioned them before the pandemic. District 7 and District 4 do need more housing. We need to make room for the next generation. I don't know that the housing needs to look the same or be the same density as the districts on the east side, but I do think that we need more housing and we do need more density. And we have plans for Stonestown, for Park Merced, for the Balboa Reservoir that have already been passed and reflect that.
Will both town halls you're going to be doing, are going to be available online, and does your website have the schedules for those?
Yes and yes. I don't think we're ever going back to a time when things were not televised and put on Zoom.
So, Supervisor Miller, why did you oppose making an exception to the Sanctuary City policy to exclude fentanyl dealers? Why would we not give law enforcement all of the tools needed to remove drug dealers from San Francisco?
So I will say, first of all, law enforcement was against that. So it's not about law enforcement. I voted against it, as did 9 of my other colleagues. It was a 10-1 vote because we thought it was bad policy. So the sanctuary ordinance does a whole bunch of things. But one of the things that it does is that it fosters trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement. So, you know, if people see something going on, we want them to trust law enforcement enough to go to a police officer and say, this is what I saw going on, without fear of themselves being deported if they're part of that community. And, you know, in talking to police, you know, I brought this up, and, you know, they told me that what was important to them about the sanctuary ordinance is that it is a built-in framework where police trust can be built. And I think that that is really important. The other thing that was important to me is that if somebody is dealing fentanyl, I want them prosecuted and put in jail. I don't want them to send to a country where there is no enforcement, where they will be free to not serve a sentence for a crime that they've committed, and where they can potentially come right back on our streets, because we in San Francisco do not control the national border. And so, you know, others of my colleagues had different reasons for not supporting it. And at the end, it was a 10-1 vote. But those were my reasons for not supporting it. I did not think it was good policy, and law enforcement did not want it.
Now that MTA has eliminated viable stickers, how do residents know whether or not the vehicle parked in front of their residence for 2 or 3 days has actually paid for a residential permit? One might wonder, this change was made to reduce MTA enforcement of residential parking.
I was not aware of that. So I'm sorry, I cannot speak to that issue, but I can get the answer to that. I am, you know, the MTA board makes decisions separate from the board, from the Board of Supervisors. You know, they control their own budget and they make those decisions. So I don't automatically know every decision they make, but this is pertinent. So I will find out and I will get back to you.
The recent closure of Whole Foods, Walgreens, CVS on Market Street, and the lack of major conventions coming back, and the empty office buildings in the downtown Union Square area needs to get shoppers to increase the sales tax and hotel tax. This person lives in the Inner Sunset. If they took Muni downtown, it takes 45 minutes to an hour. He's not shopped downtown in 5 years. It's easier and safer to go to Westlake, Serramonte, Hillsdale. My suggestions for a couple of years, reopen Market Street to private vehicles. In addition, offer 1 hour parking in city owned garages and special packages possibly.
So I'm not sure what the question is.
I think he's looking for way. It takes so long to take Muni downtown from this area. Is there a way to have maybe a brief free parking or better parking spaces downtown to increase business in the downtown area?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I, again, that would be up to the MTA because they control the parking garages downtown. You know, we have done parking fee vacations for specific events, like during the, you know, Chinese Lunar New Year parade. The entire week was free, both for Muni and for parking garages. You know, the supervisor for that district, Supervisor Peskin, you know, I think would be open to that idea. I can float that to him. I think that ultimately, you know, Supervisor Peskin, along with the mayor, floated a whole package of reforms for downtown, because I think it's going to take significantly more than just free parking. And, you know, the issues that were happening downtown predated the pandemic. If you remember, when Supervisor Jane Kim floated the Twitter tax, it was an effort to attract investment to the mid-market area because it was really hurting. And it worked. You know, we had a bunch of companies who came and located, and then the tax expired. So I think that I, in fact, today was talking to Supervisor Dorsey about what he was planning to do to sort of take it to the next level for that area. The Whole Foods has closed temporarily. They have not said it's a permanent closure. The IKEA is opening up just a couple blocks further down, and they say that they are on track to open the IKEA, and that I think is going to be great for the downtown. But for Union Square, the problems around retail predated the pandemic, because nowadays when Amazon can deliver a package to your home, you're just pushing a button on your computer, there's less of an incentive to either take Muni or even drive downtown to go to the fifth floor of, you know, Macy's. And so I think that we are going to have to think about how we use the space, given the retail realities, the mix of entertainment, housing, retail that we have downtown. And that's going to take some time and some work. And then we also have to be flexible about adapting some of the buildings that were formerly used for commercial to adapt them to housing. And we're exploring that as well.
There are a lot more questions that have come in about the cannabis locations in general.
I'm restricted about this specific project, but for folks who are worried about the siting of cannabis dispensaries, you know, we've spent years coming up with rules about, you know, how far they have to be from schools, about how the concentration. And so, you know, that I think cannabis is a pretty new use. It is a legal use. It requires a conditional approval from the Planning Commission. But, you know, I think the rules are evolving. I just want to, you know, tell folks that, you know, when we got through prohibition of alcohol and started building an infrastructure and a framework around legal alcohol use, it's taken us decades to create a regulatory environment around it, not just local rules, but also state and federal rules. And I think it's going to take a little while to get it right for cannabis as well.
What do you consider to be the most serious challenge to making San Francisco a cleaner, safer city?
Homelessness. I think that that's our biggest challenge, is that, you know, there's a bunch of issues that are sort of symptoms around homelessness. There's the drug use, the trauma, the crime, a lot of things that happen. But I think our fundamental issue is that we have a lot of folks who are unhoused, and we don't have the ability to either house them or even shelter them overnight. And the biggest lack in our system is a shelter, because we do put a lot of resources into permanent supportive housing, but we have far less shelter beds than other cities our size. And we really, I think, need to get people off the streets, because when they're on the street, they're exposed to all kinds of trauma, and they degenerate pretty quickly, and that's what we're seeing.
I've seen homeless tents near Lake Merced. Are you going to do something before that becomes a tent city?
I have not seen homeless tents around Lake Merced. Can you tell me where exactly?
We
will send the hot team out to you know, break up the encampment. But, you know, that's not something that I've seen.
Will you allow District 7 to build 50-story skyscraper to solve a housing issue?
Not in District 7. That's now in District 4.
That's right.
Stephanie's idea, but I have not yet seen her legislation.
Oh, anything we should know about 420 in Golden Gate Park?
I am getting a briefing from folks actually tomorrow, because it's, you know, that area is now part of District 7. It used to be part of District 5. And so I don't expect anything different than what happened last year, only that, you know, our law enforcement agencies are getting better at controlling the crowds.
The gentleman has owned a martial arts academy for 22 years located less than 600 feet from the dispensary proposed on Terraville. He is deeply challenged to know our civil servants can simply focus on new policy. Why would not doing the right thing and protect the 500 children that attend my business and the other children-oriented business within 600 feet of the dispensary?
If you're interested in this issue, you know, the board will hear the appeal tomorrow.
Yeah. Would you reiterate the appeal, the event tomorrow that is regarding the dispensaries?
You want me to go through what it is?
What it is and the time for that gentleman. They must have come late because the chat was way down the bottom.
So what we're hearing tomorrow is, you know, there is a project proposal for the mezzanine of the Gold Mirror restaurant to open a dispensary to sell cannabis. It is not a consumption site, but it is a sale. It is not also attached to the Gold Mirror. It's going to have a separate entrance, and it's a space that will be enclosed. So they went through the planning department approval process. They got approved. It went to the planning commission because it's a conditional use requirement. The planning commission unanimously gave them permission to go forward with the project. There are folks who do not agree, and they have the right to appeal the Planning Commission decision directly to the Board of Supervisors. It is a judicial process. So if I give my opinion or state, you know, one side or the other, I am then not neutral, and will have to recuse myself from the vote. And so I been pretty careful about that, of not, like, taking sides, because it is a judicial process and I'm supposed to remain neutral. I have been talking to both the project sponsors and the folks who are against it. And in fact, I just met with everybody just before our meeting, and we will continue to work with them to hopefully come to some kind of an agreement. But once it comes to the Board of Supervisors, you know, we will vote, and that is the end of the process, whichever way it turns out. But that's what we're talking about. It will happen tomorrow. It's agendized for 3:30 as a special order.
I assume that'll be available online if somebody wants
it
to watch
it. Online, and public comment can be provided online or by phone as well.
What is being done to address homelessness who suffer from mental illness and or substance abuse, who do not want to be sheltered where they would be required to follow rules, et cetera?
What is being done? Well, nothing can be done under our current law. And so I know that there are efforts going on at the state. Our governor has implemented legislation that is a system of care courts where folks can be, taken basically into receivership to help folks, you know, get into, you know, treatment that they need but don't want. And then at our local level, Supervisor Mandelman has been working to, you know, advance a receivership option for folks who cannot take care of themselves. But we legally cannot advance some of these things until state law changes.
There was an earlier question about public safety on West Portal. The person basically is commenting that the community policing at West Portal has been great, and will that be expanded?
Well, it'll be continued, at least for this coming year, because I put money in the budget for it. But that program, we have put money in the budget for last fiscal year, and we'll continue it as police ambassadors. They are retired police officers who know the community and patrol regularly. And, you know, they know the businesses, they have relationships, and it's been really, really great. So we have that program on West Portal and on Irving, and it's made a huge difference, and we will do everything we can to support its continuance. Thank you for noticing. They'll be happy to know that because it's a new program that they rolled out last year.
The Twitter tax break did bring business to the mid-market, but it certainly did not lead to broader improvements in the adjacent communities.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Invite me back whenever you want.
We'd like to thank you for doing it, and we really appreciate the service from all your staff, too.
Yeah, thank you.
They did a great job.
I have good staff. I'm very lucky in that way.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank everyone for tuning in.